Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy.
The trigger warnings for today's episode are explicit sexual scenes, breath play choking, torture, murder, physical assault, kidnapping, mentions of pedophilia, sexual abuse of a minor, and physical abuse of a minor.
Woof. Yeah, woof.
And guess what?
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 We got another review.
Let's Yay! Go. This one is from Sparky Chaser. Oh my, I heard about this podcast from the Clutch My Pearls podcast, and oh my god, I love these three. I love how they read and commentate the books. The ladies are simply wonderful. I'll have the podcast going in the background, studying, driving to work, etc. Keep it smutty, you horny little rats.
Thanks, Sparky Chaser.
Thanks for listening.
We love you.
And today's book is Hooked by Emily McIntyre. And how many stars did you give it on Goodreads, Jenna?
I gave it 4 stars.
Okay.
How about you?
I gave it 4, rounded up from 3.5. I really didn't like the first half. I was texting you about it and I was like, ugh. Yeah. I think it's really hard for me to enjoy a morally gray contemporary because a lot of the stuff that the male main character will say just makes me cringe because it's not fantasy. So I'm picturing like a real ass dude saying these things and I'm like, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
that's fair.
Honestly, yeah. It really pulled together the last half of the book because I'm totally with you. Like for a second, I was like,
yeah.
I mean, it's 4 stars, but I don't know if I necessarily like it's probably just going to look really pretty on my bookshelf. And I'm going to be like, wow, that's a really good book. Like, I'm glad I read it. But I don't know if it's going to be one of those ones where I'm going to pick it up and like reread it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely like a good read. The last half of the book saved it for sure, though.
Yeah. So this book was in a dual POV. So we're going to switch in between our female main character, Wendy, and our male main character, James. We have the prologue, which is in James' POV. He's finishing up slicing the throat of his uncle when he gets a call from a man named Rufus who asks him if the job is done. James says yes, and Rufus asks how it feels, and he says, it feels anticlimactic. Rufus says he'll send someone to clean up and tells James to meet him at the Jolly Roger, and James hangs up the phone, and he keeps hearing this constant tick, 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 and he reaches into his dead uncle's pocket and pulls out a gold pocket watch. He throws it on the ground, stomping it until it's completely broken and silent, and then cracks his neck, and he's like, you know.
Terrible. You shouldn't do that. Just so you know.
He thinks to himself that he's one step closer to the man he truly wants to kill. And we learn that his uncle sexually abused him as a child, and he had a pocket watch that he could constantly hear while this was going on. So the sound of any clocks or watches or anything just triggers him. Hates it. We switch to Wendy's POV, and it's 8 years later. She's just moved to Massachusetts with her widower father and 16-year-old brother, and her brother's name is John. And her father is this gazillionaire who owns an airline called Nev Airland.
Oh. Clever.
Her friend and coworker Angie invites her out for a girls' night at the Jolly Roger, but Wendy doesn't really want to go, and plus she's only 20 and doesn't have a fake ID. So she's not a rebel. She doesn't do anything naughty.
She's just a little rule follower.
She is. Angie has a friend named Maria who is a total bitch, and she's also there when Angie invites Wendy and is like, you're kind of a little baby. You wouldn't even like the Jolly Roger. And Angie's like, shut up. They start talking about a mystery man being there that Maria desperately wants to notice her, and Wendy is like, who are you talking about? And Angie just smiles and says, Hook.
Who could it be?
I don't know.
We switch to James' POV, and he is 26 now. He's in his fancy office taking care of business with Rufus, and Rufus goes by Rue. That's his little name. Rue. And he's an older man. He took James in as a child, took him under his wing, and taught him how to crime.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, nice.
Rue tells him that they have a new potential partner to help with their pixie operation, and I guess they're drug lords, and their drug that they cartel is pixie dust.
Oh, I like that.
Pixie dust.
I literally, when I was reading it, I was just thinking about those little candies that come in like the paper pixie tubes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just think about someone like opening it up and just like snorting it out.
People used to do that in elementary school.
I was also picturing those little candy cigarettes, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like chalky sticks.
Those made me feel like a bad bitch, especially on like a cold day.
Honestly, my grandma is a smoker, or used to be. She doesn't smoke anymore. But I remember when I'd be with her and I was a kid and I had those, I'd be like, yeah, grandma.
Just a little something to take the edge off.
Rue tells James that Peter Michaels, the owner of Neverland, just moved to town, and Rue wants to have a little meeting with him to let him know how they run things around here. It turns out Peter Michaels is the man that James wants to kill most of all.
Peter.
Peter.
I was about to say, don't do it.
Pina. Rue has a meeting with Peter tonight, and James wants to go, but Rue says that he'd just scare him off, and he's doing this alone. And then there's a knock at the door from one of their employees informing them of three underage girls trying to use fake IDs to get in. James and Rue go to the security cameras to see what's going on, and James immediately notices one of the girls. She looks uncomfortable, innocent, and beautiful, and he is rock hard just seeing her.
Okay.
Rock hard.
He said, she looks pure.
Boner.
Dick's hard.
Daddy likey.
Ew. He fires the bouncer for not being able to handle three measly girls all by himself. Fair. You're a shit bouncer if you can't handle three girls at the front
Honestly,
door.
Honestly, just say, get out.
Yeah.
You can't come in.
Then he announces he's heading down to the main floor because he has an appetite for something pretty. This is the shit he says where I'm like, you are a real man on planet Earth.
Disgusting.
Shut your mouth.
Let alone a drug lord.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. But, you know, we switched to Wendy's POV. She's sitting in VIP drinking champagne courtesy of an admirer. She asks Maria more about this Hook character, and she says that he's beautiful and mysterious and he owns the whole bar. And she insists that they had a moment once, but like, they didn't have a moment. She's delusional.
Delulu.
She just thinks he's hot and she's like, I want to sit on your face.
Yep. Wendy excuses herself to use the bathroom, and on her way, she runs straight into a solid wall of man muscle. Who could it be?
Hunka hunka.
She looks up at the man's face and he's breathtakingly handsome. The energy between them is palpable, and Wendy quickly steps back, but he grabs her hand and kisses it, telling her it's been a pleasure. She rips her hand away, but he grabs her arm, pulling her body into his, and she's like, what the fuck? And he asks her name, but she says that he hasn't earned that yet. He looks intrigued and puts his hands in the pocket of his fancy suit, and Wendy walks away. So that was their meet cute.
I'm sorry, but like, if that happened in real life, I would literally punch
like,
someone.
Don't fucking touch me.
I would run away. Run the other direction.
I'd be like, get the fuck off me.
Yeah. We switch to James' POV, and he knows exactly who this girl is and decides not to hold her father against her, but he does want to use her for his own gain.
My cock lengthens at the thought of driving inside her until she breaks, leaving wounds that scar with the reminder I was there, tarnishing her innocence and then tossing her at her father's feet, a defiled version of the girl he bred. Delicious.
He's gross.
Yeah.
Oh.
This isn't sexy. If he had wings and like shadows, then I'd be like, hot. He's a human man. Pipe down.
Settle.
You just have an average penis? No thanks.
Yeah.
It doesn't have horns, ridges, nothing? Don't want it.
Back at his office, he watches her move through the club on the cameras while simultaneously Googling her and reading articles about her.
Okay, don't act like you guys don't search people up.
I've never done that a day in my life.
Never?
No, I did it yesterday.
I was gonna say, bitch, I do it every day.
It'll be someone I met like once in high school, and I'm like,
where are they now?
I like know where their mom lives, their dad's credit score.
Yeah.
Perfect.
A gruesome image of me thrusting inside her on top of his remains, my cum dripping from between her thighs and mixing with the pool of blood beneath us makes my cock jerk violently, a groan ripping from my throat as I palm my aching erection. Why is it always aching? I feel like it's always painful.
Why does it have to be gruesome? Why can't be like passionate?
I think he's imagining fucking her on her dad's dead body.
Oh,
not passionate, gruesome.
Every girl's dream.
Yeah. He texts one of the cocktail waitresses to come into his office, and a girl named Moira does immediately, telling him she missed him. I can't take the name Moira seriously. I just think of Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. I was like, I hate that name, but now I don't hate it as much, but I still hate that name.
We love
it. Sorry to any Moiras that are listening.
Is that a real name for real people?
I guess. I've never met anyone named Moira, but I'm sure there's some out there.
Oh. Hey, Moira.
Hey, Moira.
If a Moira is listening, let us know.
He tells Moira to get on her knees and ignores how much her voice annoys him. He tells her not to get any cheap lipstick on his expensive suit, and she says, okay.
My gaze swings to the computer, watching the true object of my desire, and as Moira's hot mouth surrounds my cock, slurping along the shaft and sucking me down her throat, my eyes stay locked on the cameras, imagining the day when I'll have Wendy in her place, and I'll make her choke on something truly filthy. Yeah, like your dick.
Your dirty dick.
Yeah, your dirty, muddy dick.
He's got some bad thoughts. He needs a therapist.
Yeah, he straight does. To therapy.
Yeah.
Later that night, Rue walks into James's office after his meeting with Peter Michaels, to which Peter never showed up in person and sent some kid in his place. Rue told the kid to relay the message that Peter needs to show some fucking respect and learn the way things work around here, and tells James that when they do meet in person, it's only fair that James gets to come along now. James says excellent and turns to watch Wendy getting ready to head out for the night on the cameras. He excuses himself and watches as she slides into a taxi, disgusted that her father hasn't gotten her a driver, because he's like a billionaire and his daughter's just taking a taxi home.
It's like, why are you with the commoners?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Oh, he's British also.
Oh, yeah.
Tuesday, isn't it?
He gets into his Audi and follows her home to make sure that she gets there safely, because Wendy is his.
Oh. She just doesn't know it yet.
Yeah. Ooh. Just a walking red flag. We switch to Wendy's POV. The next day at the coffee shop, Wendy is having a horrible shift. She's the only barista in, and she keeps fucking up orders, and then a man comes in being hella rude about the lack of service. She doesn't really need a job, but she just wanted one, so she works at this little coffee shop.
So does her dad give her any money?
Yeah. She can have, like, whatever she wants. She lives in his mansion and stuff. He orders a coffee, and Wendy trips on a puddle of water and falls right on her ass. And the man makes some smarmy comment to her, and then she hears a voice saying, is that any way to talk to a lady? Or he gets like, is that any way to talk to a lady?
Perfect. Spot on.
Thank you.
Spot on.
And she recognizes the voice immediately. She offers the Karen man the coffee for free, but he's like, I already paid for it. Just make my fucking drink. And James asks her if she often lets small men speak to her this way. And the man gets even more pissed and is like, bitch, make me my coffee. And James laughs menacingly and is like, your watch, it's really loud. And the man demands his coffee again. And James is like, do not make this man coffee, darling. Wendy is getting a little soaked at this, and James reaches into his pocket and leans in, whispering something into the man's ear that causes him to run out of the building.
I'm sorry, but if this whole interaction was happening and I'm the barista, I don't think I would be soaked. I understand it's a book, but if this was happening in real life,
bone dry,
I would be shitting, crying, throwing up, pissing, everything.
Well, you'd be a little soaked with urine.
With urine.
Yeah. Okay. Then yeah. I was like, no, I wouldn't, Charlotte.
James looks at two twins. I put two twins in my notes and I didn't know how to word it. So it's like two men and they're twins, not like two sets of twins. Two people.
Yeah, they're like identical, and he just like stopped trying to tell them apart, so he just calls them the twins.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of mean.
The twins are wearing fancy suits and they work for James. He nods at them and they walk out. Wendy thanks James and asks what she can get for him, and he says a date. She tries to decline, but he's like, no, we're going on a date when you're off work. And she's like, no, we're not. They exchange names and he walks out saying, I'll be seeing you, Wendy, darling. And that's her pet name. He calls her Wendy. Darling, like Peter Pan.
Oh my god.
She gets off work and goes home, falling asleep, dreaming of James. We switch to James POV. He has the man from the coffee shop tied up with zip ties in the dungeon of the bar. So his bar has a dungeon that he uses to torture people.
It's normal.
Yeah. He rips the duct tape off the man's mouth and he is pissed, saying fuck you to James. James pulls out a knife and tells the man that he obviously lacks self-preservation, especially with the way he spoke to Wendy in his presence. The man tries tries to apologize and even pisses himself, but it's too late for that now. James can hear the man's watch ticking and he loses his shit and grabs the man's face and straight up just cuts his tongue out. And he has a knife that he uses to do all of these things, and it's like a hooked knife. That's why they call him Hook, because of his hook knife.
Oh, not because he has a hook?
I mean, he has a hook knife.
But he doesn't have a hook.
No, he has two hands.
Yeah, he has two hands. Ugh.
What the fuck is this?
Plebeian with your two hands.
Disgusting.
He grabs the man's arm and slams it down multiple times until the watch breaks and stops making the ticking sound. And then he cuts the man's hand off and just starts slashing him across the stomach. He feels better now that the man is dead, and he looks to his twin henchmen who are just casually watching and tells them to clean this up. He walks back to his office and pulls up a picture of Wendy and jerks off to make himself feel better.
Ew.
Yeah, he kind of...
He look cray cray.
He is, but like not in a fun way.
No.
We switch to Wendy's POV. She gets in an argument over the phone with her dad when her dad drops the bomb that he's sending her little brother off to boarding school. Wendy is upset because her father's never home, even though he promised to be more present after the move, and how he just kind of tosses her little brother on the back burner constantly. She gets a text from Angie telling her that they're going to the Jolly Roger tonight, and she starts to think about the handsome stranger and texts back to count her in.
Go get your mans.
We switch to James's POV. Rue lets him know that they have a meeting set up with Peter Michaels next week and warns him not to be an intimidating dick like he normally is. It's Rufus's birthday, and James hands him a fancy custom lighter encrusted with rubies that is engraved with "Straight on till morning," which is one of the first things that Rue ever said to him when they first encountered each other when James was a child.
Aww.
Yeah, so it's very sentimental. Rue just grunts when he looks at it, but James can see an almost smile on his lips, which is like a big deal because Rue is very stoic and not emotional at all. So he's like, he fucking loves this lighter. He goes out to the bar to have a conversation with one of their drug mules who he suspects is two-timing them. In the middle of this, he sees Wendy walk up to the bartender and he decides to make this meeting with his drug mule quicker than anticipated. He suggests that the man give the names of everyone who's betraying him or face the consequences and advises him to make the right choice before walking away toward Wendy. We switch to Wendy's POV. Her, Maria, and Angie are sitting at the bar, and Maria's like, oh fuck, he's coming over here, thinking James is coming over to talk to her, but then he goes, hey darling, to Wendy, and she tries to ignore him while Maria is just sitting there like pushing her boobs out trying to look as sexy as possible.
She's like, look at me.
Me.
Not my friend.
He's like, oh, you're gonna ignore me in my own bar? And she's like, well, I didn't know you own the bar. And Maria is like, hey, Wendy, who's your friend? And tries to introduce herself, but James only has eyes for Wendy. He asks how they're liking everything, and Angie makes a joke that the drink needs some more work, so James calls over the bartender to reprimand him, but Wendy panics and is like, no, she was just joking. These drinks are really good, because he was straight up about to, like, fire this bartender.
Or probably, like, kill him, because yeah. He's a fucking Jesus. Psycho.
The bartender's name is Curly also, which I thought was very fun.
Curly?
Curly.
Cute.
James tells the bartender that this group is the most important people here, and all the drinks are on the house. Wendy tells him he doesn't have to do that, but he says he wants to make sure his darling is taken care of, and she gets hella soaked.
She does.
Mm. He asks her to go on a date with him, and she's flustered and says okay. All of a sudden, his demeanor changes, and he looks actually really happy. He says he has to go handle some business, but tells her not to leave without saying goodbye. She realizes this is the guy that Maria is obsessed with, and that means he's Hook, and now she's nervously drinking wine. She turns and apologizes to Maria, saying she promises she didn't know that this was the guy that she was so into, and Maria says it's fine. She's fine, but, like, she's not fine.
You know? Oh, but no. Maria's, like, a bitch to her, like, the whole time. Like, Maria's, yeah. Like, not a good friend.
No, she is not.
I was gonna say, in her head, she's, like,
fucking bitch.
Well, then she says she's surprised that he'd be into a girl like Wendy when he could have anyone he wants, but if he's gonna be hanging around more often, she'll probably just try and swoop in, so.
Oh, a cunt.
Yeah.
That's what she is. A bitch.
A bitch, if you will.
A fucking hoe-ass bitch, if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah, she sounds like the worst.
Maria.
They go to leave the bar, but the doorman stops Wendy and says he was told not to let her leave, so she tells Angie and Maria to go on without her and tells the doorman to take her to his master then. I would not. I'd be like, no, I'm fucking leaving.
I know, I'd be like, no, thank you.
We switch to James' POV. Wendy is pushed into his office where he's sitting after having dealt with the guy from earlier, and she's like, why am I here? And he says to say goodnight. The tension is thick and they're just about to kiss when Rue walks in, and he apologizes for interrupting and asks James who the girl is. Wendy tells him her name and he says it was nice to meet her, and Wendy's like, all right, well, goodnight. And James says, I'm gonna take you home. She says that's not necessary, so he walks her out instead, and they agree to go on their date tomorrow when she gets off work and she gets in a cab. James gives the driver some money and says if anything happens to her, he's fucking dead. He's just a man trying to do his job.
This guy's like, okay.
All right, cool. I'll do my best.
She puts on a form-fitting black dress the next night and leaves her house to go meet James at the coffee shop. He got there before her, and when he sees her, he gets up and kisses her cheek and says she looks beautiful. He brings her out to his fancy black Audi, and she has no idea where they're headed. He brings her to the marina to go on his yacht called the Tiger Lily. He tells her they aren't taking the boat out. He just wants to have a private dinner with her. She looks around and sees all the furniture and stuff and is like, you live here, don't you? And he says yes. His live-in crew member, Smee, serves them dinner.
Smee.
Smee.
It's Smee.
They eat and he gets hard just watching her. He tells her she looks beautiful in the moonlight, and she says just to be real with her because she doesn't know if he's putting on a show for her, and he's like, nah, this is me, baby. She walks around the table and plops down right on his lap, and she says he's showing her the things he has but not who he is inside, and he leans in and kisses her.
Oh, yeah.
They're making out now and doing a little dry humping, and she gasps when she feels his erection pressed up against her, and now it's getting hella hot and heavy.
Do me a favor, pet, anything, I stutter out, grind that sweet little pussy on me until you make a mess all over my lap. Grind that sweet little pussy. How would you not be like, okay.
I would laugh until I threw up.
I'd be like,
I think okay. If I was drunk, I would just do it. But
oh, like, yeah. If I was drunk, I would be like, oh, yeah, you fucking like that. But dead sober, I'd be like, oh, all right.
Sure.
Yes. I guess I will.
Her panties are drenched and she grinds against him, feeling an orgasm building up, even though there's nothing inside of her. And there never has been before because she's a virgin.
Oh. Ooh. Saw that coming. Pure little innocent Wendy.
He asks her how she makes herself come, and she grabs his hand, placing it around her neck, and he asks if she likes being choked because he can for sure do that. He flips them around so she's laying on the bench and gets on top of her, and he flips her skirt up and starts touching her pussy and slides his fingers in, and he says she's drenched and asks if anyone has touched her here before. She says yes, and his eyes darken and tells her nobody but him will ever touch here again, and she tries to suck in a breath, but he's still choking her, and she starts to come around his fingers. When she comes down from her orgasm, he tells her she's such a good girl. She's exhausted and closes her eyes and immediately falls asleep, and when she wakes up, she's alone in his bed.
Typical man.
Typical.
Fucking pump and dump.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's in his bed, though.
That's true. True, true, true.
Also, the first time he ever touched her vagina, and he's like, this is mine forever, and no one will ever touch you here ever again.
She's like, wow.
I know. That's she's like, oh, I so love hot. That. That's a big fucking red flag if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
He said, this pussy, mine.
Forever.
You ain't ever leaving, bitch.
Don't ever leave me, because I'll find you.
I'll chop it up into pieces.
We're back in James' POV. After Wendy fell asleep, he carried her to his bed and went to go make some tea. And he's kind of freaking out a little bit because of how much he liked messing around with her. He heads back to his room to bring her the tea and reminds himself that he can't develop real feelings for her because she's simply a tool to be used to get to her father. He smiles at the marks around her neck, and she says she had a great time but thinks she should head home for the night. So it's still like in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
When he parks next to her car, he tells her he'd like another date and says that he also wants her to belong to him, and she says, I'm yours. Gag.
Sorry, what? We just met.
Yeah. It's the next day, and it's time for Rue and James to meet Peter Michaels at the Cannibal's Cave, which is an abandoned cavern in the middle of the forest. We learn that James's family died after a business meeting with Peter Michaels in a crash aboard one of the Neverland planes, and James was the sole survivor. So this is why he hates Peter so much, because Peter sabotaged the plane and killed his whole family. Peter arrives with his assistant, and her name is Tina Bell.
Tina.
Rue lays into Peter about sending a lackey to their last meeting and tells him not to waste their time. Peter says they can use his planes and ships to transport Pixie and weapons, but he wants a 50% cut. And they laugh at the audacity. And Peter looks at his phone and says he's got to meet his daughter for dinner, but he hopes they'll make the right decision. So he's basically like extorting them.
Yeah.
We switch to Wendy's POV. She has a tense dinner with her father, who shows up with Tina Bell. And Wendy lays into him about being absent and never being there for them. He tries to tell her that he'll come around more often and says she's the most important thing to him. And she's like, what about John? Like your other kid? Yeah.
He's like, who?
Yeah. He was like, what about him? Wendy's like, you need to tell him you're sending him off to boarding school. And he promises he'll drop the bomb in the morning, but when they wake up the next day, Peter Michaels is already gone.
That bitch.
We switch to James POV. He's shaking down the owner of a new bakery in town, but the man says a woman already came in and took all the money he had in exchange for protection, saying that whoever she works for is new in town and the big head honcho around these here parts. James is pissed and is like, that was for sure Tina and Peter, and says the man better come up with more money and fork it over, or it won't end well for him. He leaves the twins to beat the guy up a little to send a message, and as he's walking out, he runs smack dab into Wendy, who's going in to get some scones, and he tells her that he's gonna take her out tomorrow. She invites him into the bakery with her, but he's like, nah, sorry, I can't, because like that would be very awkward. He just goes back in on a date.
He's like, oh hey.
As the guy's like beaten to a pulp.
Yeah, he's like, hey. They share a little smoochy, and he tells her to come to the Jolly Roger tonight, and he also tells her when she goes into the bakery to tell the owner that everything she gets is to go on Hook's tab, because he knows the owner. The audacity.
Yeah, what a dick.
He tells her to wear something blue tonight because it's a great color and he can shred it off later. We're back in Wendy's POV. She's back home and John tells her that their dad called and broke the news about shipping him off to boarding school. A driver's being sent to take him tomorrow, and Wendy is like, no, I'm driving you. She puts on something blue and heads to the Jolly Roger with Angie, and after 2 hours she still hasn't seen James. And Angie's like, girl, I gotta go. I work early. And Wendy says she'll stay here and wait a little bit longer for James to show up. Angie says okay, but to text her if he never shows, and Wendy ends up needing a ride. The bartender asks Wendy if she needs another sparkling water because she's not drinking, and she says no. And then she asks if he's seen Hook, and then Moira walks up behind her and starts laughing.
Fuck you, Moira.
Fucking Moira.
And she's like, another groupie hanging around waiting for Hook. How hilarious. He's not even here tonight. And the bartender is like, Hook knows this girl. Chill out. Back off. And Moira says, don't worry. I gave him a proper goodbye before he left.
I sucked his dick. Womp womp.
James walks up behind her and says, don't lie to my special guest. And Moira's like, oh shit. He picks up some glasses on the bar and tells her that these are smudged and she's not very good at her job.
Period, boo.
He tells her to clean them or she's fired. He waves her off and walks up to Wendy and tells her she looks edible. He apologizes for getting held up in meetings and leads her out of the bar.
If someone, if Greg walked up to me and he's like, damn, baby, you look edible, I'd be like, thank you.
You wouldn't be like, take a bite out of this pussy.
What do I look like to you? I don't get it.
Do I look like a little ribeye steak?
Yummy.
I don't even eat steak. I don't know why that was my first.
I was like, wow, a steak. Don't eat red meat, but okay.
Yeah.
We're back in James POV. He takes Wendy back to his yacht and they get to talking. She asks what he does for a living and he says he's a businessman. And she's like, oh, so is my dad, Peter Michaels. Do you know him? And James is like, I've literally never heard that name before in my life.
Fucking liar.
They start doing a little making out, a little dry humping, and Wendy bites his lip, making him bleed. Do you know how hard you would have to bite someone's lip to make them bleed?
She's like,
yeah.
I'm gonna try that on Andrew.
Just make him bleed, take a chunk out of his face.
I have, like, no doubt that he'd probably hit me. Swing on me.
As he should.
Honestly.
This turns him on and he deepens the kiss and she starts sucking on his tongue. This is in so many books and this grosses me out. And if you do this, no judgment.
I don't, like, I need to see a visual of it. I don't really understand it. I'm like, is their tongue just,
Yeah, and you like, you slurp it up. But it's like,
I get like
slimy.
The sucking on the lip. But, like, yeah. The tongue?
Yeah, and it's in so many books.
So, Jenna, you don't do that?
I've never sucked on a tongue.
Try it.
Yeah, can you try it and let us
know? Yeah, I will, for sure.
Thank you. Gonna be like, what's happening?
No context whatsoever. I'll just be like,
out of nowhere, do it.
I'll let you guys know next recording session.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
For science.
For science. Yeah, if he's like, why did you do that? For science.
Don't ask.
James pulls away and asks when he gets to see her pretty little pussy, and he reaches under her dress and rips her panties off. Rips them off.
Woof.
I feel like if you're wearing a thong, like, that must give you, like, rug burn in between your butt crack.
Yeah. Or, you know, a cut. A wound.
A wound.
Like, which way is he ripping it off? From the front? From the back?
I mean, the way I thought it.
Did you just say up?
Up. Her legs just dangle from the ground.
Yeah.
Her poor little puss. Tossing the torn fabric behind me, I push her thighs apart, my nose running up her glistening slit.
Glistening.
A groan rumbles in my throat. She smells delectable, like musk and woman and everything pure, as if her pheromones were bred just for me. My mouth waters with the need to taste her while she comes apart underneath me. I move toward her opening, lapping at the wetness that's seeping from her center. Disgusting! The word seeping should never be used. Sounds like a seeping wound. Lapping at the wetness that's seeping from her center. I had to say it again. Coating my tongue with her taste. She giggles, her fingers wrapping around the strands of my hair. That tickles, James. Oh, God. That tickles.
He eats her out and fingers her, and he has a feeling that she's a virgin, and he's stoked that he's going to be the one to corrupt her, and he has to hump the couch just thinking about it.
Oh my God.
What are you, a dog?
Whoop, whoop. He tells Wendy to hold her breath and not to breathe until she's seeing stars. He grabs her throat and continues just chowing down on her, and almost immediately she starts to come.
I release her throat, reveling in her deep gasp of air, and continue to lap at her while she soars from the high. Finally, I release her clit, my fingers making an audible noise as they withdraw from her sopping cunt. My gaze locks on hers as my tongue swipes across my lips, cleaning her taste from my mouth. Sopping.
Yeah.
The adjectives being used.
Yeah, you like it?
Descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
I love them.
We switch to Wendy's POV. She undoes his pants and pulls his dick out, and he starts to jerk off and tells her to strip. She slowly starts pulling her dress down, and he says not to torture him. And she tells him to say please, and he jumps up and grabs her dress, ripping it off while still jerking off. He's just ripping everything she owns.
I think of Hulk Hogan, like,
yeah.
He says he never begs, and she starts playing with her nipples, and he tells her she looks beautiful when she touches herself. She starts to give him a hand job and asks him to tell her what he likes because she's never done this before. He says that he likes that he's the first, and there's nothing she'll do that he won't like, and commands her to put her mouth on it. She does, and he uses his hands to push her head down far enough that his dick is going down her throat. This is the first time she's had a penis in her mouth, and he's like, down your throat.
You gon' gag, bitch.
He pulls her up by the hair and says it feels too good, and carries her into his room, throwing her on the bed. He gets on top of her and asks her to tell him that she belongs to him, and she says, I'm yours, and he slides into her. She tenses up, and he tells her to relax or it'll never fit. She does as a tear slides down her cheek, and he licks it up and pushes the rest of the way into her. The pain is starting to go away, and it starts to feel really good for her, and she asks him to come inside of her, and he does.
Girl, it's your first time.
Afterwards, she realizes she has no regrets about James taking her virginity. We switch to James' POV. He wakes up next to Wendy the next morning, surprised at how well he slept. She says she has to get up and go because she's got to take her brother to boarding school, and he's like, oh, you have a brother? And she's like, yeah. He doesn't want to be shipped off, so I'm driving him, and James blurts out that he could go with her if she wants, and Wendy's like, actually, yes, that sounds wonderful. Wendy brings him to her house, and while she's upstairs getting ready, he decides to snoop around. He's just about to go into her dad's office when John walks up behind him and is like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, hey, I'm James. I'm a friend of your sister's. John warms up instantly and is like, my sister needs a friend, and they shake hands. Wendy comes up and is like, oh, good, you guys met. And also, what are you doing in my dad's office? And John covers for James and says that he was just showing him around. And James is like, this kid's cool as fuck. They head out to the car and James's phone rings. He excuses himself and answers it, walking away. It's Rufus saying he's got a meeting with Peter in a few hours. And James is like, I'll meet up with you tonight because I have plans right now. We switch to Wendy's POV. They get to the school Cole, which is also on an island. So he's shipping him off.
Yeah.
All the way off.
He said, I don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
For real.
They have to take a ferry, and John and James are getting along super well. The school is a legit castle, and when they go to the front desk, Wendy's like, I'm here to drop my brother off. The lady working there is like, the headmaster's busy right now. It'll be a minute. And James uses his charm on the woman, and all of a sudden, the headmaster is miraculously on his way.
Oh.
Yeah.
He just bats his eyelashes, and he's like,
pretty boy privilege.
Yeah.
They meet with the stocky man, and James tells Wendy and John to go in the other room to say their goodbyes because he's going to talk to the headmaster to make sure John is taken care of. Wendy and John share teary farewells, and John is like, James seems cool, and they tell each other they love one another, and James walks out. He hands John a piece of paper with his phone number on it and says to call if he ever needs anything at all.
What a good guy.
Is he, though? Because he gave her little brother his phone number. He's a good guy.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Leave me alone.
Wow, like one green flag. I guess it like undoes all the red ones.
Yeah.
Right? That's the max.
He has one little green flag outweighs all the big red ones.
Exactly. Yeah.
He loves her brother.
Period.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's enough for a relationship to work.
James said that the trip took longer than usual, dropping John off at boarding school, but he felt the need to talk to the headmaster about how the staff is to treat Jonathan because he reminds him of his younger self, and he feels the protectiveness of him. As he pulls up to Cannibal's Cave, he's only 30 minutes behind the schedule that he previously talked to Rue about. There were no other cars there, and it's empty at the opening where they met last time, and he just knew instantly that there was something very off about the scene. He continues walking in deeper, and he steps on something hard, and when he lifts up his foot to examine it, it's the ruby lighter he got Rue for his birthday.
Not Rue.
I know. As he moves closer to the edge of the cave, he sees Rue bound to the tree, nails protruding from his hands and his feet, and his middle split from the inside out.
Yeah.
Sad. I know. It's like, I was reading this and I was like, no. He vomits when he gets closer and sees the body and memories of Rue's kindness just overwhelm him, and he's just like plagued with PTSD instantly. The grief completely consumes him. He's having major survivor guilt, saying that he should have been with him to protect him, but he was with Wendy. And when that thought crossed his mind, he instantly was like, Wendy's in on it, because they were saying how the new person in town, it was a woman that was like visiting the shops and taking the money and stuff.
Yeah, and he was like, Wendy showed up to the bakery like right after.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
Since George the bakery guy said it was a woman, he assumed it was Tina, Peter's assistant, but Wendy was there that day. And he's just thinking about how convenient it is that she intruded in on his life and like made him put down his walls, and he was with her, and then now Rue's dead. So now all he's thinking about is revenge. He takes Rue's lighter and lights all the fallen leaves all over his body and watches it go up in flames as he says, rest easy, my friend.
It's not Wendy.
Or is it?
It's Wendy's birthday. James hasn't talked to her since dropping John off at Rockford Prep 3 days ago. Her dad called to wish her a happy birthday, but also said he's ordering extra security because apparently he's being blackmailed and needs to make sure there's extra protection for her at the house.
Man, he really does not give a fuck about his son.
He really don't.
No, and she was like, are we gonna have dinner tonight? And he was like, I'm actually really busy. And then she hears Tina in the background be like, come on, we're gonna be late. Let's go. We have reservations. And she's like, God damn it, Dad.
Right. She tries to tell him that she's not a kid anymore. Maybe she can help her dad. And he says that she can't help and she just needs to listen and do as he says, and just tries to like talk down on her. Wendy was feeling jealous when she was on the phone with her dad because it was her birthday and her dad wasn't spending time with her, but was taking Tina out to dinner instead. So she just hung up and went upstairs to pack a bag to leave. Wendy was talking to herself in the mirror saying, you aren't a child, Wendy. You're a bad bitch. And then suddenly from the background, she hears, I agree, you most definitely are not a child.
Who is it?
At the moment, Wendy was obviously shocked to see James sitting in her room.
No.
And then he gets up really quickly and pushes her until she's flat up against the glass and there's a knife pressing into her face. And he puts his hands over her mouth to muffle her scream before she can even try to escape.
He said, I know you did it. You killed my friend.
You killed can't. Him.
You're going to rue this day. Pun intended.
Rue it. Ron, no!
He's going to sacrifice himself!
At this point, she's thinking, like, what the fuck is going on? What the fuck? He has a knife up to my face. I'm like, what the fuck? She's just watching him in the mirror. Strands of his dark hair is falling on his forehead. He's wearing a black trench coat and black leather gloves. And she says that it's just making him look like an angel of death. So she's still sitting in, like, Delulu land.
Imagine your significant other wearing a black trench coat. Is that sexy?
No. I'd be like, oh, this is it. We're going to be on some Lifetime movie. You're going to kill me. But also, part of me would be like, oh, is this some, like, hot foreplay? Is this a skit? Who are you playing?
So the blade gleams in the mirror's reflection, and the metal is cold, and the hook edge is pressed into her skin. And now she's shocked. She's like, I get it. I get the nickname now. I see.
That's why they call you Hook.
He's talking about how fear has a scent, and he pulls her hair and tells her that her fear smells sweet. He asks her if she's always planning on deceiving him this entire time, and she's crying silently, but she literally has no idea what the fuck he's even talking about, and she's still trying to deny it. He says he doesn't believe her, and after all, she's always been such a good girl, so incredibly adept at following direction. He tells Wendy that this will only hurt for a second, and her brows furrow as she sees a syringe being pulled from his back pocket. There's a moment where she tries hard to get out of his grip, and then all she sees is nothing.
Hook, no!
Yeah. She wakes up in complete darkness, chained to a wall, and she's shackled. Curly steps into the room with some food for Wendy, and she's really fucking pissed. She felt like her and Curly could have been friends, but here he is looking at her while she's chained in a dark room. She just got kidnapped. She has no idea what's going on. So she was just so mad at him, so she spits in his face.
Honestly, I would too.
And he's like, fine, you can fucking starve. And he takes the food with him and leaves her alone in the dark room. She was able to see a table with powder bricks on it, like, I guess, like kilo bricks. And when she was examining it, she was trying to figure out what it was. And then finally she hears a voice, which was James saying, "Is pixie dust." As he talks and walks closer to her, she felt sick by the way that her body still reacts to him, because she gave him everything only for him to be a villain in disguise. He told her that she should eat, and she told him he should go fuck himself. And he said, "What did I tell you about your filthy mouth?" And she said, "You said a lot of things, Hook. Turns out I really don't give a damn about a single thing you said." He said, "I'm not the liar here, darling."
Yeah, you are, bitch.
Right? She's like, "I literally don't even know what is going on." He tells her that playing the victim is unbecoming of her, and she was like, "You literally have me chained to a wall."
I am literally the victim.
I know. She's like, "I'm not playing. I am one."
And he was like, "I promise you, boo, it's temporary." And then she reminded him that he also drugged her, and he was like, "Would you have gone willing?" And she was like, "I would have gone anywhere with you. Like, I don't think you understand that. I don't know what's going on, bro, but
I loved you. After 2 days, I loved you so much."
She lusted for him.
She did.
Yeah, she did.
He said that her father took something irreplaceable to him. And she said, "My father, I don't." And then he got so angry, he picked up and threw a chair next to her face and loses his temper and screamed to her, "Do not play innocent, you vapid, stupid girl." He unlocks her chains because he told her that he finds it rather erotic, her chained up. But if she acts out, he will retaliate. He said, "You will eat, you will drink the water we provide you, and you do not do anything reckless, or I will chain you to the ceiling and rain your blood on the floor."
Jesus Christ.
Okay. Which honestly, like, not even lying, like, I was reading that and I was like pushing my hair back. I was like, oh. That was where I was like blushing. I was like, wow. He's so strong, probably.
He's so strong with such bloodlust. He wants to kill me. I love it.
The next chapter goes to James's point of view. James says it's been 3 days since Wendy has been in the basement of the JR, and his plan now is for her to watch him kill her dad and then for him to kill her.
Stinker. Little stinker.
Don't do that.
It's been almost a week since the murder, and shipments are still going missing. Peter Michaels is doing everything to control his streets, and James is supposed to take over officially as the boss. James walks into the cell with Wendy. He says that he has a gala tonight and that he's going to take her back to his house so she can go shower and make herself presentable, and that she's going to be his date. She calls him disgusting, and he says that, "I may be, but until otherwise, I'm also your master." He tells Wendy that he doesn't regret that it's come to this, but we all have times in our lives where we must pick a side, and unfortunately, she picked wrong.
She didn't even fucking do anything.
And still she's like, huh? Like,
she's like, what the fuck did I do?
Why won't you tell me?
I know.
She gets to Hook's house, and he leads her into his room. He tells her there's fresh towels for her, and he has had a dress delivered for her. When she asked how he knew her size, he said he's a very hands-on memory. She asked him what he wanted from her. He stepped towards her, and he hovered over her and said, what I want for you is to stop playing me for a fool. And what I want for you is to bring back souls from the dead and let them feast on your father's screams. Can you give me any of those things, Wendy, darling? She asked, this whole time, did you know who I was? He said, of course I knew who you were, from the moment you walked into my bar. And her heart fractured from the cracks of the sudden pressure in her chest. All she said as a response was, I think I'd like a shower now. She's just disgusted, and she was like, I was played like a damn fool. Played like a fiddle.
Honestly, yeah. And she was. He said, I know who that bitch is, and I'm gonna get what I want. Mm-hmm. While she was like, oh my god, I'm losing my little V card. Oh my god, with this man that really likes me.
No. Negative. False. James says to himself that it's still undetermined of what he wants to do with her. Once he's done the gala, part of him wants to throw her back in the basement and let her rot. It's no less than what she deserves. But the other half of him wants to tie her up on his bed and use other means of forcing the truth out of her. It infuriates him that she still acts as though she's been innocent. But he says that seeing her tonight and seeing how she interacts with her father this evening will tell a lot. There's a super loud pounding coming from the bedroom, and James flushes out a skeleton key and unlocks the door to a beautiful gowned up Wendy. Smee's like, is she locked in there? And he's like, yeah, don't you worry about it though, bud. Like, got it. You mind your own business, okay?
He's like, I got reasons.
She is wearing a powder blue fabric sweetheart neck gown with an open back that is sophisticated enough to be seen on his arm, yet ravishing enough for every man to wish they could have her. He describes her as stunning and his perfect little pet.
You will not try to escape. I open the case, a whoosh of breath leaving her as she takes in the diamond-encrusted choker. You will not say or do anything that could raise concern. I slip it from the box, the gems cool against my hand, and I lean forward, placing it around her neck, my fingers tracing her skin as I fasten it in the back. My eyes flick from her lips to her throat, a shot of desire pooling low in my abdomen. There, my hand brushes over the jewels before resting on the swell of her cleavage, my palm rising and falling with her heavy breaths. Every good bitch needs a pretty collar. Excuse you!
I would hate that.
I would say, well, I'm a bad bitch.
Yeah, you tell him.
He instructs her that under no circumstance will she take that necklace off. As they pull up and she steps out, the cameras start flashing, and Hook says that he watches her transform right before his very eyes. Her face lights up, and she gives the camera a mega smile, and his heart skips, and revulsion follows closely behind. Once again, his body's out of control when it comes to her. Hook orders a whiskey neat for himself as Wendy gets a glass of champagne, and then he suddenly says, happy birthday, by the way. Sorry I was late. I was preoccupied. And she like whips at him and she's like, how did you know it was my birthday? And he said, you'd be surprised how much I know. She asks what that's supposed to mean, and he says, it means whatever I want it to mean. I know of your birth, Wendy Michaels, and I'll know of your death.
Because I'm gonna do it.
She's like, is that a threat? And he said, I find threats to be terribly wasteful. I only speak of things I intend to see through. And she's just like hella mad at this point. She says, if you're gonna kill me anyways, why should I bother being your obedient bitch? To anyone else, it would have looked like lovers in a passionate embrace. He grabs her really fast, wrapping his arms around her neck, jerking her close to him. But the whole time she feels nausea and panic, and he says, be very careful what you say next. You're bleeding heart, darling, and it's not your own life you should be worried about. The police commissioner comes up to greet them, and Hook introduces Wendy as his date. The commissioner says, she seems a little bit out of your price range, and Hook does not think that's funny. His body tightens and his head tilted, and he says, I'm afraid I don't understand what you mean, Reginald. Are you insinuating something about me or who I have on my arm? Hook says that a gentleman knows when to apologize after insulting a lady, and the commissioner apologizes to Wendy. And that really sunk into Wendy, realizing how much power Hook really has if he's able to speak to the police commissioner that way.
Honestly. Also, maybe you owe her an apology, James.
Right? Yeah. Jimothy?
What? So no one can disrespect her, but you disrespect her every day of your life? Okay.
Make it make sense.
Red flag.
The commissioner asks if Rue is still avoiding all these things like the plague, and Hook tightened his grip around Wendy, causing causing her to whimper a little bit. He was able to say, I'm afraid Rue took a very sudden permanent vacation. The commissioner's wife was like, oh, that's nice. I want to go on vacation. I've been trying to get this guy to retire. Just yapping away like it went completely over her head. And Wendy could just tell that he was getting really restless. She wasn't really paying attention to the conversation, but she noticed how Hook's fingers started kneading the curve of her hip. And she didn't even know if he knew what he was doing. She just knew that he seemed uncomfortable. And she reached up and rubbed his arm and asked if he could show her where their seats were because her feet were getting tired. He looked up and his eyes started softening and brought her hands to his mouth and said, of course, sweetheart. So she just like did him a solid. She could tell that he was like obviously uncomfortable at the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I don't know why I'm doing this to this man. He sucks, but I'm helping
honestly,
him out.
He does suck.
Before she could stop the words from leaping off her tongue, she said, I met Rude, didn't I? And he says, you did. She says, it's nice he got to retire. And Hook's hands shoots out, gripping underneath her seat, pulling her chair, dragging loudly across the wooden floor in an embarrassing loud noise. And he says closely to her, I don't know what game you're playing, but it stops now. And I suggest you don't test me. And she says, I'm not playing any games.
She's like, did he retire or not? What the fuck?
His palm lands on her thigh underneath the table, squeezing in a bruising grip. And he says, remember what's at stake, Wendy. Then she gets mad and she's like, as if I'd forget. And then she hears a voice go, Wendy?
Daddy?
And Wendy twists in her seat and comes face to face with her father. Peter's face is a mask of confusion and his forehead is wrinkling as he looks between them. Peter and his stupid ass assistant Tina are sitting at the table with them and they're all eating a salad. And James puts a cherry tomato on a fork and asks Wendy if she's hungry. She shakes her head no because she's like trying not to fucking vomit at the situation. He puts the cherry tomato in his mouth and he says, I do love popping a good cherry.
Oh God.
I would pass away.
I would shit my dress.
Just shit stains down the back of your
dress. Immediate shit.
He grins at Peter and his arm drops from the chair to Wendy's shoulder, touching her bare skin. Just basically like antagonizing him.
Mm-hmm.
When her dad asks what she's doing there, shouldn't she be at the mansion? Her eyes pop out and she's like, what do you mean at the mansion? And Tina pops in and she's like, I think what your father's trying to say is that the last place we'd expect you to be is here. And Wendy says, why would it be so surprising to see me here? Because I wasn't given express permission. For the record, I've never needed or cared about Tina's permission. And this makes Tina really pissed. Tina sucks.
Yeah, fuck you, Tina.
Wendy asks, didn't you care where I was when your new security didn't find me? He said, is this what you running away is about? That you didn't like that I was trying to provide protection? Tina mutters under her breath to James, control your date. And James goes, now why would I want to do that? Peter says that this is not the time or place and asks if they needed to go somewhere private to speak. Wendy's eyes flick over to James, but he doesn't move. He's kind of like testing her. He's waiting to see if given the opportunity what she'll do. She just lifts her chin, sighs deeply, and says, no, I have nothing left to say to you. James says that there's so much pleasure at her obedience that circles through him. It's like a leaky faucet.
Oh.
But he has to remind himself that she isn't someone he should reward for being good because she's a traitor. Although it's odd the way that she's interacting with her father as if they aren't on good terms. Her and her father have some unspoken passing between them with their eyes before Tina cuts in and she says, so how do you to me. In his head, he says, because you sent her to my bar, you pathetic swine. And Wendy cocks her head and she says, he already told you, didn't he? He popped my cherry.
Wendy!
Yeah, she's ballsy. She's like, I'm pissed at you, daddy.
His dick was in me, daddy.
James chokes on the liquid of his drink and his hand shoots to his chest to stifle the cough. And Wendy's dad hisses, Wendy. And Wendy smiles wide and goes, what, dad? Suddenly decide to care again?
True. Call him out. Call that man out.
Suddenly, confusion slams into James because apparently they're supposed to be working together to destroy him. It shouldn't be a surprise how they met, unless she really had no idea.
Yeah, okay, follow all the fucking social cues, James.
Right?
Jimothy. Clearly, she has no idea what's happening. How does he not fucking see that?
Yeah, and the thought cramps his stomach and bruises his heart.
You dumb bitch.
Not his heart.
Wendy says, I think the more important question is, how the fuck did you two meet? And she points between her dad and James, and her dad says, nothing exciting there. We've met briefly for business. And James just laughs, the tips of his finger caressing her diamond choker, which is a brand of ownership, but also a GPS tracker, so he can always keep a watchful eye on her.
Oh, James.
James says, "Oh, don't be so modest, Peter. We more than met. In fact, I believe you were well acquainted with those who I'm close with. Seems only fair I return the favor."
So fun being British for a day.
Beautiful.
And Peter's eyes tighten and he says, "Yes, and where are they tonight?" James stiffens with rage and he's like, "This motherfucker just killed my entire family and everyone that I loved." And Wendy's face snaps toward him and her eyes are looking at him up and down. And they look back at her father. She drops her fork and reaches her hand to press up on James's chest and then cups his jaw. The shock of her tender gesture is enough to clear the anger from him. And she just leans into him and presses a kiss to his cheek and just says, "Take a deep breath. People are starting to stare." James collects himself. And then Wendy asks, "What is that supposed to mean?" to her father. James's chest pulls tight because then he for sure realizes that if she was part of Peter's plan, she would know exactly what he meant by that. Her dad just said, "Wendy, it's a simple question." James says, "That's quite all right. I found much more enticing company," as he strokes Wendy's hair.
Yeah, like fucking your daughter.
His heart's shattered right now because he's starting to realize that he's a stupid, dumb idiot. He's like, "Oh shit, I just held her captive when she really wasn't part of this at all. She never betrayed him."
Yeah, as she's been saying.
Such a dumb idiot.
You would think for like a mafia boss that you'd think a little bit before you act.
Guess not.
Wendy just feels stupid because she spent her entire life looking up to her father and basically like idolizing him. But now she realizes that she doesn't even know the man that she's looking at. She knows the hook is most likely going to maybe hurt her for lashing out, but she doesn't really care because being able to speak her mind is liberating. And not only does Hook allow it, but he encourages it. The twins come up to Hook and Hook says that he needs to be gone for a moment because there's a pressing matter that needs his attention. And he tells Wendy to behave because there's nowhere in the world that she can run to that he won't follow. With Hook gone, Wendy's dad said, "Wendy, I'd like to speak with you in private, please." Wendy's like, "I probably shouldn't, but Hook's not here and I deserve to have some closure with my dad, so I'm gonna go." They just go into another room. She's like, "Dad, like, did you really not know I was gone? Don't try to beat around the bush over here, okay?" And he was like, "My security team told me that you weren't home, but I just assumed you were throwing a temper tantrum."
Okay, she's just gone for days and he's like, "She's fine."
He said that if he would have known that she was busy frolicking around with a psychopathic criminal, then he would have scored the earth to track her down. And she says, "How does he know that James is a psychopathic criminal?" And he says, "How do you not? You're playing a very dangerous game here, Wendy."
"You're also a criminal, PETA."
Exactly. Yeah. She yells at her dad about belittling her and says that she's so sick of everyone treating her like she's some porcelain doll who's supposed to keep her mouth shut, sit still, and look pretty. Her opinions matter. Period, boo.
"Yeah, know your worth.
Tell that man."
She says that he hasn't tried since their mom died. And he says, "You know nothing about your mother." She says, "So I'm stupid. I don't know Hook. I don't know mother. And I sure as hell don't know you."
I was going to ask what happened to her mother, but found out just now.
Yes, her mother died in an apparent car crash. He asks if Hook is forcing her to be there. She wanted so badly to like to scream at him the truth, but instead she distracts him and she's like, "How's Jonathan?" And her dad literally doesn't care. He's like, "Who?"
"Wow."
He said, "Who's that?"
He's like, "What does this have to do with the conversation?" She's like, "A lot, actually." And he's like, "Has Hook hurt you? Has he forced himself on you?" Acting like he cares.
"Yeah, in my pussy."
Yeah, right? James comes in and her dad is like, "Whatever you're doing isn't working, James." And James walks over to Wendy, slams into her, and then cocks her neck to one side, stretching it until it hurts and she whimpers. At that point, it kind of looks like forceful. And he's making eye contact with her dad. And instead of her dad like pleading for him to stop, he just smiles and he's like, "I told you, little shadow, he doesn't care for you." He gently presses pillow soft lips to the middle of her throat and his tongue sweeps in to taste her skin and just gives her light little kisses on her neck. James lets go of Wendy and gently pushes her to the side and he stalks closer towards Peter and he says, "Do not make the mistake of thinking I am like the other men that you've dealt with. I do not care about my reputation and I do not care about the money or the businesses you burn." And this whole time Wendy's like, "What the fuck's he talking about?
I thought my dad just like sold planes."
She's like, "What the fuck's happening?"
James continues and he says that in fact there's nothing you can can steal from me that you haven't already taken. These are my streets, and I've been waiting so patiently for you to come and play. Peter's already taken everything from him. He's literally killed every single person that he's loved, so, like, he's got nothing to lose.
True. The man deserves to die.
James's hand reaches into his pocket, and Wendy sees that he starts to reach for his hook knife. She just starts, like, running into overdrive, and she shoves her father back, and she's like, stop! Like, no, please. She's pleading with James not to kill him.
Why? Your daddy's a bitch.
It's still her daddy.
That's true. It's still her daddy.
Hook's fingers brush down her cheek, and he just whispers, so loyal. And then he looks at her father. And then he asks, Peter, where were your pleas? Or maybe you'd rather I spill her blood to cover your sins. And her dad says absolutely nothing.
Kill that man.
Right? He sucks. Wendy's and Hook's eyes lock on each other, and the silence is absolutely deafening from her father not saying anything. James sighed and said, very well, and pulled Wendy into his arms. He hugs her and tells her, I want you to memorize this moment, darling. Remember how it feels to realize your father was willing to let you die in order to save himself. And then he whisks her away while her soul shatters to dust.
That's so sad.
They pull up to the JR, and there's red and blue flashing lights coming out of the window, and it was completely burnt to the ground. There's nothing left but rubble. And when Wendy asked what happened, he said, your father.
Aww.
They finally return back to his yacht. They're in his room, laying on his bed. They're still dressed in their fine evening wear, not speaking and barely moving at all. Wendy's looking at the ceiling and just casually asks, are you gonna kill me? And he's just like, I haven't decided yet. She told James that she was sorry about his bar, and he confessed that it wasn't actually his bar, that it really was Rue's. And she said, where is Rue? And he says that he's dead. Wendy remembers earlier in the night when her father asked where he was with a smirk on his face, and anger and disbelief crashes together, an explosion of grief. Grief for the man who raised her, and grief for the father that she just lost, because she knows that what she had in her head as her father is no longer there.
Yeah,
he's a bad guy.
Piece of shit.
She tells James a story about her father when she was younger. He used to collect acorns for her every time he would leave for a business trip. He would put an acorn on her dresser with a note promising that he would be back soon, and she would collect these acorns like kisses, she said. And James said, it's impossible not to care for you, Wendy. If it was, you'd already be dead. And a laugh bubbles out of her chest. She's like, I'm delusional. I have Stockholm syndrome right now, but
honestly.
For real.
He's like, hey, I haven't decided if I'm gonna kill you. And she's like, oh, little teddy bear.
Big ol' softy.
It's not a yes, right?
Just a maybe?
She tells Hook that she doesn't want to die. And he just says, go to sleep, darling. Your soul is safe tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah, right? It's like so ominous. And she says, I watch you, you know, when you think that no one can see you. And if my father has something to do with what makes you look so sad. She reaches out and just grabs his hand. She just says that she sees him and she wants him to know that. He doesn't respond, but he doesn't move his hand away either. And that's how they stay until they fall asleep together.
Sweet.
Wendy falls asleep right away, pretty much. And James wasn't able to fall asleep because he's like, I got damage control to do. My club just burnt to the ground. That was their main source of money laundering for the drug business. James is about to leave for the night when he runs into Smee in the kitchen island. James says that Wendy's here and she's not to leave the boat under any circumstance. And if there's any problem, call him immediately, and that she's locked in the room. Just as he's about to leave, he hears a tick, tick, tick. He asks Smee what that noise was, and he holds up an old looking watch connected to a gold chain. He says he found it in a pawn shop and he just had to get it. He knows it's a little loud, trailing off, and James is overwhelmed with anger. James yells, I said get it out! And then Smee throws it overboard. He says, do not ever, under any circumstance, bring a clock onto this yacht ever again. Do you understand? And as he walks away, he feels the control slip back into place as the silence fills the void. Since the JR is burnt down, their new place is called The Lagoon, which is a strip club on the outskirts of town. He calls Moira in to tell her what happened last night. She thinks that he called her for a blowjob, but he told her that she's not there for that.
But I want to suck your dick.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why am I here?
She's like, so I'm not going to choke on dick tonight? What the fuck?
I'm just going to go home.
She's like, that's all you need me for. What else am I to do?
He said, tell me everything that happened tonight. She's like, I already told them everything that I knew. And he said, tell it again. And she said, everything was fine. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, an explosion or something. To be honest, she was so worried about making sure everyone got out, she didn't think much of whatever else was going on. And he said,
said, stay right there and don't speak. In the past, he might have been interested in using Moira's body to please him, but now the idea repulses him.
It's Wendy or nothing.
Is Moira suspicious? She seems a little suspicious, but also part of me is like, she's just like a dick sucker. It's not anything crazy.
Just a bartending dick sucker.
Yeah, part of me feels like she's a little suspicious.
She might be.
She's got the sussy vibes. So she says, I can think of something else to do, and walks over and drops on her knees and starts palming his cock, and he bats her hand away and he grips her chin forcefully and he says, did I tell you to touch me? She says, no. And then he says, no, don't you wish to please me? And she says, yes.
Yes,
and then he says,
Daddy.
Then sit down and shut up. Your mouth is of no use to me anymore. Over the course of the next hour, they sit in silence. Occasionally, he calls random employees to come in for no other reason for them to make sure that they see him back there with Moira at that exact moment. While Peter has the money and the social standing, James has loyalty. And you take care of people and they'll take care of you. It just so happens that the security guard at the Nev Airland airstrip is a personal friend. His child had cancer, so Rue paid for the cancer treatment in every single doctor appointment after that. But he's going to have to disappear, of course, after looping the security feed and allowing his boys inside to lay every single plane on fire. And he knows that his wife and children will be taken care of and protected by the Lost Boys until their last breath. He looked at Moira, telling her that she can leave now. He calls her name and says, feel free to tell people I gave you a nice ride today. She scuffs and slams the door behind her. Then he gets a text from Smee saying, your girl is gone. Wendy finally wakes up and she makes her way out of the room. And Wendy finds Smee in the kitchen. She asks where Hook is and he says that he's running errands. He offers her coffee and she's like, I've been drugged so many times by so many people. I'm not going to take anything that I'm not making, so no thanks. But I do want to go outside if that's okay. And he's like, okay.
He's like, meh, do what you need to do.
Oh, okay. She promises she won't go anywhere. She just wants to soak up some sun. And he says, go ahead, Miss Wendy. She was just trying to get comfortable in the loungers, but no matter how hard she tried, she was just too jittery. So she took two steps off the boat and sat onto the dock and put her feet in the water. Well, she knew that she could run, but she just didn't want to. She was having some self-reflection. What caused her to snap out of it was footsteps from behind her when she looks and see Hook stalking down the wooden walkway. His mouth is twisted and his eyes are narrowed and he's looking extremely unhappy. He asks her if she thinks that this is a joke because she must. He said, do not mistake my generosity as weakness, Wendy, or I will tie you to my bed until I break you of the will to leave.
Jesus Christ.
She calls him fucking insane and he's like, skirt, what the fuck? What did you just call me? She's like, even though I know I should take it back, the Jekyll and Hyde personality is like bending her past the point of breaking. So she pushes up on her elbows because he pushed her down on the ground until her nose graces against him and she's like, I called you fucking crazy. Like, she's just egging him on.
That's right.
He grabs her face and kisses her. And at first, it was shocking, and then she completely loses herself to him.
You think I'm crazy? He rumbles into my ear. You make me fucking crazy. His teeth sink into the juncture of my neck right as his fingers plunge into my core, the sharp pain piercing through me and mixing with the pleasure of being filled. My head flies back onto his chest, eyes rolling at the sensation. Tell me you like my hands on you, pet, he demands. Tell me you miss the way it feels.
She does. She does miss that. He asks if she apologizes for breaking his rules, and she says yes. And then he says, you're not going to do it again, right? And she says no. And he says, that's my girl. And then he pinches her clit and his fingers tightening around her neck until all of her oxygen is cut off and she comes apart in his hands. He says, don't ever try to leave me again. She just nodded against his chest, choosing to live by her bliss before the shame and grief would resurface and would swallow her whole again.
I was gonna say, she didn't even try to leave. She was just sitting next to the fucking boat, wasn't she? And he's like, yeah.
I think in like James's point of view, like, she probably had rules because her bedroom was supposed to be locked or something. He probably thought she tried to escape.
Fair.
He was worried when Smee texted him that Wendy was gone, and that thought made him angry. Both that she would leave, but also that he would care. He stares at Wendy with shock as he realizes that he started to care for her, and he no longer wishes to use her against her father. If he gives her freedom, she'll run away from him, though. She was leaning her head back with her eyes closed, and James calls her beautiful, and she says, I bet you say that to all your hostages. Like flirting with him or something. And he's like, I told her she always has that mouth on her. And that snark's gotten worse since she's been under his protection. And she laughs out loud and she's like, is that what we're calling it now? Protection? And he's like, do you truly believe that you'd be safer out there than you are with me? And she looks at him and she's like, Hook.
And that nickname makes his stomach drop because he doesn't like her knowing him as Hook, especially when she's the only person in this world that makes him feel like James.
It's James.
He gets a call from his right-hand man, Starkey, that says there's people to interrogate. And Smeed obviously isn't capable of watching her, so he doesn't want to leave her on that yacht. So he's going to bring her along. He asks how she got out of the bedroom, and she's like, what do you mean? So he says the door was locked, and she's like, but the door was not locked. He's like, yes, it was. And she's like, not when I tried it.
Smee.
He asks if she's lying to him, and she's like, why would I lie? And he's like, there are several reasons, actually. He finally tells her that she's coming with him to the lagoon, and she's like, I'm literally wearing your boxers and a t-shirt. What do you want me to wear? And he's like, you and Moira are the same size. I'll text her, and she can come with a change of clothes. And she's like, how do you know what size Moira is? Is that from your hands-on memory? Delight sprinkled through him with the thought of Wendy being jealous over him. There's a little bit of hope, too, because he's like, maybe I haven't ruined every single chance that I have with her. As Wendy's upstairs with Curly, his other right-hand man, Hook is downstairs interrogating the traitor. He says that his name is Tommy, and Hook says that either way, he's a dead man for betraying them. Since he's fair, he will let them choose whether his death is painful or swift. He says the person was a woman, and that she came a few months ago and started sleeping around and telling them how her boss could give them more than what they're given. When Hook asked if he was a giving employer, Tommy says that he is, but he wanted to be a part of something. He wanted the mark. And interest finally peaked with Hook with this new information. He hasn't heard of the mark yet, and he asked what the mark was. And he's like, it's a tattoo, bro. It's so fucking cool. Hook was like instantly annoyed and stabbed him 3 inches over from his femoral artery. He's like, you know what? Since we're bros, I decided to spend some more time with you and not let you die quickly. So we're going to be talking a little bit longer. Tommy said that the tattoo is a crocodile wrapped around a clock, and it's the mark that you get when you join the ranks. He said that they all call him Croc.
And Croc was his uncle's criminal name.
Yeah. Mm. So that was like instantly triggering. Hook's hand slips from the knife's handle, and fury like no other races through him. And he's like, liar! How did you know his name? And Tommy says that he was telling the truth, that he goes by Croc, and he's never met him, but the woman's name is, and then a boom happens. The next chapter is in Wendy's point of view. The chapter opens up to Moira seething as she offered Wendy some of her clothes, but the pride simmering in Wendy's chest at Moira knowing that Hook brought her there and she's wearing his clothes was enough for her to turn them down. She came to terms with the fact that emotionally she knows Hook's messed up, but she can't change the fact that when she's truly with him, she discovers more of who she can be. Hook storms into the room with Starkey on his tail, and he's trying to talk to Hook, and he just says, Starkey, do not speak unless you want to lose your life. He has black leather gloves on, and his button-up shirt is rolled up to his elbows. There's red splattered along his skin. His hair is disheveled, like he's been tugging at the roots. Wendy noticed a slight tremor in his hands and the way his features are tight, and she says that she can just feel the air around him shift, like she could feel him asking for her help. She rises from the couch and walks toward him, not stopping until she's right in front of his face, and he blows out a breath and looks down at her. She says hi. He says hi back, and she tries to make a joke saying, I know this might not be the best time, and the corner of his mouth twitches. She presses her hands to his chest and leads up to his tippy toes and asks if she can speak to him alone. He tells everyone to get the fuck out. His hands trace up her back as she's not only desperate to calm the situation, but to have him to herself as desire crashes down on her. This time, it's her who leans in for the kiss.
Wendy.
She's like, my man is disheveled and I love it.
He's in turmoil. Sexy. I'm gonna fix him. I'm gonna help him.
He came so close to losing it, but then stupid Starkey put a bullet in Tommy's head, saying that his finger slipped on the trigger.
Okay.
The name Croc sends absolute disgust racing through James. No one knows of him except for Rue, and the only exception would be that it was tortured out of him, and the thought of his closest friend spilling his deepest, darkest secret to Peter is completely crushing him. He's internally at war with himself, wanting to break everything apart or cut himself open to get rid of the memory of his uncle while he's plagued with PTSD, childhood trauma.
Oh, this poor guy.
I know. He's just so damaged.
He is. I could fix him.
Yeah.
Wendy grabs his hand and puts it over her heart and says, give it to me. And he's like, I have nothing left to give. She says, then give me all of your nothing. And then plants kisses all over him. Something in him breaks at that, and he tells her, do not pretend to care for me. Not now. I won't be able to stand it.
Oh my god, you're gonna do this again.
Wendy's like, what if I'm not pretending? Hook says that he's given her no reason to care. He's not a good man. And she's like, I know. Like, you literally held me captive in your basement.
She's like, I have eyes.
I know you're not.
He's like, I've tortured, I've killed, and I'll do both again, boo.
And I'll do it again.
And I enjoy it. He says that he also regrets everything for every single moment that she suffered under his hands, that she is without a doubt the only good thing that he's ever known. And then he pleads with her not to lie to him because his heart won't survive it if she does. And she leaps up and kisses him passionately, exploding as they lose themselves in each other.
I reach for the neck of her shirt, jerking it until it rips in two, exposing her nipples that are pink and hard and gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
I knew. I literally read that and I was like, I have to give this to Riley.
Her gorgeous nipples. I suck one into my mouth, twirling the bud under my tongue as my hands strip the boxers down her legs.
He wants her to choose him, not because he demands it, but because she can.
My fingers dip between the folds of her cunt, slipping through the wetness. I work my way down her torso with my mouth, kissing and nipping, apologizing with my tongue and my teeth for all the ways I've hurt her, for all the pain I know I've caused. My face lands between her thighs, and I inhale deeply, the aroma of her arousal making desire coat my skin. Always so wet for me, pet. I slip two fingers inside, watching her tight walls suction around them. You're such a good girl. Do you know that?
I just suction them right in.
Just vacuum seals them in.
Yeah. He's like, help. My hand is stuck.
Her legs tremble as they spread wider, opening herself for me to feast. She gets off on the praise. Twisting her fingers in the strands of my hair, she tugs me forward. I go willingly, swirling her clit into my mouth, her taste exploding on my tongue. I groan, pressing my face into her deeper, wanting to drown in her essence until I feel her in my soul. I glide my fingers in, curling upward before easing them back out, then dipping them down lower to coat a different opening with her arousal.
Oh, good grief.
He fingers her booty hole while he eats her out, and she comes so hard she does that like weird silent scream thing, like if you know you know. He tells her one day he's gonna fuck that booty hole and she's gonna like it, and then she takes his face and licks all of her pussy juices from his mouth.
Oh.
She takes his pants off and then goes to remove his shirt, and he freezes, and she just says it's okay, because every time that they've ever hooked up or anything, he's always kept his shirt on. And then she calls him James for the first time in what seems like forever, and that undoes him with emotion, and he finally lets his shirt slip off. Her fingers glide across his abdomen, and he's terrified to see the look of pity on her face. But instead, she looks at him with an open gaze, and she touches every scar, many of them from his uncle torturing him.
That's so sad.
As she calls him by his name, James, he asks her to say it again, and she says, say what? And he says, say my name. And she said, James. And then he slams his cock into her.
Slam it in.
He wants her to say that she's his, not because he said to, not because he's asking her to, but because she is, because she's going to stay even though they both know she should leave. And she says, I'm yours, James.
The sound of our skin slapping mixes with her moans until she tenses and then explodes. Her pussy walls clench around me, urging my balls to tighten, my muscles seizing until they ache. Cum pulses through my shaft, my cock jerking wildly inside her as I coat her womb with my seed.
Her womb.
Her womb.
That's, I'm pretty sure, physically impossible, but
he said my seed is all up in her.
All up in her womb. He blasted right through that cervix, went straight into the womb.
Right into the womb.
Cervix. And in that moment, he knew that he loved her. And that scared him more than anything else ever has. They're getting dressed and he's putting a gun in the waistband of his pants. And that's a little bit unsettling to Wendy. She wasn't sure where she stood with James, but she wanted to see her brother. And he said, okay. She also wanted her phone back. And he said, done. She said that she wanted to tell him that he wasn't with Moira. And he was like, ever? And she's like, well, not ever. I know you'd be lying. And he's like, I haven't been with Moira or any other woman since the moment I touched you.
That's a lie.
No, it's not.
Yeah, huh?
No.
Didn't he kiss her little hand at the place and then he had Moira suck him off right after?
Okay.
A liar.
Okay, fine. A liar.
He said, if someone else touches her, he'll cut off their hand so no one else can touch anything else ever again.
Normal.
A bit of an overreaction.
She asks if he's going to kill her father, and he says she needs to understand that her father took everything from him. And Wendy's like, but he's my dad. And he's like, yeah. Well, yeah, but he killed mine.
True.
It's been 2 days since James told Wendy about his past. Smee brings Wendy something to eat per her bossman's order. Smee tells her that he was homeless outside of James's club, and James took him in and told him as long as he learned everything on yacht maintenance, he would be able to stay with them. She asked if he grew up in Bloomsburg, and he said yes, he's been there his whole life. And then she asked if he had any family, and his eyes darkened at that question. She noticed it and apologized for prying, and he says it's fine. My mom's probably looking for her next fix, and my dad was a good dude, although he didn't know who he was until a few years before he passed. She said the pain of lost time never really gets easier, does it? And his fingers tighten on the neck of his beer bottle, and he says it sure doesn't.
Smee.
Sus. James says he has plans, and Wendy says that she wants to go to the Vanilla Bean. James said that she can go and use the Aston Martin, but to humor him and to not take off the necklace. So she's still wearing the diamond choker that she thinks is like a cute, endearing gift, but really it's a GPS tracker.
I feel like I'd be okay with wearing a GPS tracker.
If it was a diamond choker, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'd be okay with that.
There's been no news of Nev Airlines up in flames, and Peter has seemed to disappear off the planet. A shipment of $1 million of pixie dust never showed up, and Hook calls Starkey in and threatens his life, but ultimately lets him live, then orders him to find Peter's assistant, Tina Bell, and bring her in. James grabs champagne and roses on the way home for Wendy, and when he puts it on ice, Smee says, "Aw, that's so romantic," and asks if he really likes Wendy. James says that Wendy has become a paramount to his happiness, and Smee says that he's been waiting a very long time for him to bring someone home. James admits they didn't get off on the best foot, and Smee says, "Sometimes you have to just be patient and let everything play out." He asks if she's in the room, and Smee says he doesn't think that she left all day. He thanks Smee and tells him that he's a good man and he appreciates him. Wendy's laughing at the irony of her having Stockholm syndrome as James walks in, and then he's like, "For the record, if you want kids, done. If you want to stay here and never work again, done. You want to watch the world burn?" And she's like, "Let me guess, you'd set it on fire." And he says, "Oh no, darling. I'll hand you the match and stand at your back and watch you become queen of the ashes."
Sweet.
Swoon. She realizes that James sees her as an equal, someone worthy of standing at his side. She calls him dark and mysterious and beautiful, and he says, "Darling, if I'm dark and mysterious, then you're the stars." They make sweet, sweet, naughty, sweaty love, and she tells James that she thinks she loves him. And he said that Wendy's the first person besides his mother to ever say, "I love you," and although he felt it, he couldn't say it back, just because he's worried that she'll take it back, or maybe she'll still think that he's using her for some other purpose. Hook goes to the lagoon, to the basement, where they have three men with the mark on them. Hook's like trying to get to the bottom of who this woman is, because he's like, this is so personal, it has to be someone that's trying to get to him.
I feel like it's Moira or Smee.
He's trying to find out where they got their mark from, who's giving it to them, and the three guys are just giving him the silent treatment. He started torturing the men, and one of them breaks and tell them that it's a woman who used to work at his bar, the JR, and her name is... Moira.
I knew it.
That's the T. Ooh, Tom and Dirty Ho.
Yeah.
She's the worst. Cunt. Honestly, not gonna lie, I did not see that coming.
She's sucking his dick and she's two-timing him.
That's wild.
Wendy was finally able to get a hold of John and apologized for not being able to call until now. He's like, "It's okay. James told me that you were sick." And she's like, "Huh?" Like, what do you mean? Come again? He's like, "Yeah, James has been calling almost every single day since you guys have dropped me off."
Oh,
it's almost kind of like overbearing. Can you kind of tell him to chill a little bit? And she's just trying not to cry at the love that she has for him, because even while she was being held captive, he was calling the boarding school every day and calling, checking in on John. John asked if she'll be home tonight, and she said, "Yeah, why?" And he said that their dad is picking him up tonight, and he wanted to call and let her know to be home.
Oh.
She knows that if she calls James, that he will tell her not to go, but she doesn't want John to be alone by himself, so she said that she's on her way. She tried to call James, but he doesn't answer, so she leaves a message and sends a text to him just in case. She pulls up to her mansion, doesn't see her dad or Jonathan, and it's only Tina high as fuck off of pixie dust. She's like, "Tina, what the fuck?" And she's like, "Somebody's gotta test the product, sweetie.
Somebody's gotta test the product."
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, "It's a shame I was told not to hurt you, because I really fucking want to."
That's what Tina said?
Yeah. Wendy's like, "Who told you not to hurt me?" And she's like, "Every everybody, and she's just like seething with jealousy. Tina says that it's exhausting, always being second to Wendy. Tina snapped and slapped Wendy, and Wendy closes her eyes to regain her composure. And when she opens her eyes, Tina's in front of her with a big vase raised above her head, and then next thing she knows, it's coming crashing down over her head. And then she falls to the floor, and Tina gets the vase and crashes it down on her head again, and then everything goes black.
Tina, you psycho.
The next chapter is in James' point of view. They finally pull Moira into the basement of the lagoon, and Moira has the tattoo of the crocodile and the pocket watch. And she told Hook that she flipped because he treats people like shit. And he said, spare me the theatrics. Okay, he treats her like shit because she's never been anything more. Period.
Yeah. You ain't nothing but shit, bitch.
He tells her that she made a mistake choosing Peter, and she's like, Peta? I don't even know Peta.
I love
my
it.
My man is Croc. My man's Croc, and he's got your precious. And he said that he's never known true fear until then. He tracked down her necklace, and when he gets to Cannibal's Cave, he has him, Starkey, and the twins. And he's solely focused on getting Wendy out alive and unharmed. Surprise flickers through him as he realizes that revenge isn't even on his radar. All that matters is her. He sees her tied to a chair, unconscious with dried blood on the side of her face, and his blood starts to boil. Peter greets James, and James calls him a disaster father figure yet again, and Peter just says that sacrifices must be made. He asks Peter why he lured him out here, and a voice comes in saying he didn't. A voice too familiar. Smee.
No.
Dun, 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 dun.
Smee.
What a whore.
Smee said that it was so hard all these years not to kill him right in his sleep. And he was like, that hurts me. I thought we were friends. Smee goes, we're more than friends. We're cousins.
Boom, boom, boom.
You killed my daddy.
Yep. Somebody get Jerry Springer.
Truly.
Yep.
Smee says that he was there the night that James killed his father, and that he purposely planted himself as homeless in front of James's bar. Starkey comes in, and he's covered in blood with bruises on his face, most likely from the twins.
What? Starkey too?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Starkey now has a gun pressed up to Wendy's head. Peter now pulls out his gun, calling Smee Sammy. And he's like, Sammy, this was not part of the plan. And Smee says he told him the only way to get to James was to put Wendy in danger. Peter, you knew the risk and you agreed. At this point, Wendy's eyes widen and she's like, what? You literally knew that all this was going to happen and you still agreed? What the fuck, Dad?
Yeah.
James cuts in and he's like, hello, darling. It's wonderful to hear you speak. Are you feeling okay? Because this is like the first time that she's talking after waking up from being unconscious. And she's like, oh, you mean like with a gun up to my head? And Starkey's like, this isn't a joke. And he puts the gun under her chin and then in her mouth. And the rage consumes him. But he doesn't want to risk her life. So they were like, drop all of your weapons. So he drops his blade. And then when asked about any other weapons, he also drops his pistol from his waistband. Smee was like, see, Peter, I told you he was in love. Smee opens up a new pocket watch. And Peter is forced to listen to the tick, tick, tick and relive memories of his skin being flayed and sliced and him being sexually assaulted.
So sad.
Smee stabs him in the side with Hook's blade and asks if he regrets killing his father. And James said that he'd kill him 1,000 times over and over to have him watch every single time. Smee said that the entire empire was supposed to be his, and James fucked everything up and he took everything from him. So Smee will take everything from James. James was like, you want my life? All you had to do is ask. It's yours. And Smee was like, that's not good enough. I want to see the look on your face as I kill the one person who will show you love. And then gunshots ring out.
No!
James' eyes immediately go over to Wendy and she's fine, but Starkey's dead at her feet. Another pop, and Smee's shot dead in the back of the head, dropping right at James's feet. Peter killed them.
What?
Peter says, you look just like your father, and your brother looks just like you. James just laughs. Wendy's like, first off, how many siblings does this guy have? Like, that I don't know about. James just laughs and he's like, you're fucking with me, right? A cousin and a brother? It must be my lucky day. Tina yanks Wendy down so hard so she's unable to move just as her father pushes the gun to James's forehead until he drops to his knees. Her father asks if she can see the resemblance and she's like, who? Who are you talking about? Her father's like, John! The bastard child of your mother. and my old business partner, Arthur. And James just realized at that moment that John is his half-brother. And Peter crouches down and jams two fingers into James' side, saying that he thought that he died along with them in the plane crash.
Wait, so John is Wendy's brother, but is also James's brother. Jesus Christ.
Wendy begs and pleads if he ever loved her, ever, to stop. Peter asks James if he has any last words as the guns to his head. And James says, the greatest thing I've ever done in my life was to love you, Wendy, darling. And her heart just breaks and an agonizing sob breaks through her. And her dad spins around because he's like, what the fuck just happened? And she violently snaps her head against Tina, causing her to release her grip as she turns towards Starkey's body. Just as Tina was able to grab her ankles, she was fast, but Wendy was faster. Wendy twisted and put the revolver up to Tina's face and pulled the trigger and blew her head off.
Yeah.
Good.
Bye, Tina.
Wendy dipped her toe in the murder bus express and wanted a Greyhound ticket because she quietly asked her dad if her mom actually died in a car crash. And then he was like, little shadow. And she was like, did she? And he was like, no, she didn't. When she asked about John, he said, John is not my son. He's a bastard, a living embodiment of her mother's disrespect. And Wendy holds the gun up to her father and says, don't make me do this. And he just laughs it off saying, Wendy, babe, I'm your dad. Come on, you're not going to. James is trying to console her, saying like, it's okay, just put the gun down. You don't have to do this. And as she was lowering the gun, her father's shoulders relax. And he says, I'm sorry it has to be this way, little shadow. In time, you'll understand it was for the best. He turns around and puts his gun back to James's head. And James closes his eyes as if he's ready and willing to accept his fate. But Wendy is not. She's like, dad, and lifts the gun and cocks it. And she's like, I'm sorry too. And then pulls the trigger and his body falls to the floor.
Yeah.
Holy shit,
daddy.
She's crying, vomiting, probably shitting and pissing herself at this point and can barely see. But our daddy James is there to pick up the pieces. I'm not sure how he's conscious because of all the blood loss, but he's there for her. And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
A week later, it was her father's funeral. And she's still grieving. She's grieving the man that she used to know.
Yeah.
Somehow they were able to pin the murder on a low-level criminal named Sammy Antonis, which was Smee. They had an in-house doctor meet them, and James had 47 stitches and a few blood bags and a couple weeks rest, and no one would have known that he'd gotten so close to death's door. He says that he's always hers every night, and she replied straight on till morning.
Oh, sweet.
2 years later, it's Wendy's first full year as his wife. She's pregnant with their second child, and the first one is just 1 year old, and he's waddling around on his own. And she didn't know it then, but she was actually pregnant at her father's funeral. The first baby is a little boy named Rue. James, Wendy, and the whole family, they're living their happy little life, but eventually he does have to go home so he can run his empire. John is starting college in a few weeks to start his engineering degree because he wants to build planes of all things. Wendy tried getting her job back at the Vanilla Bean, and they said no because of her attendance. So James bought the entire Vanilla Bean for her.
Very Christian Grey.
I know. Honestly. I love it. And then James says, to think it all started with a little bit of faith, misplaced trust, missing pixie dust, and a villain who just needed to steal a little bit of love.
Oh,
that's it.
That's the end.
That's the end.
What an ending.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I think I'd give this one 4. I liked it. I liked the story.
Do you think James is sexy?
A little bit.
Just a little.
Just a little bit.
There's a small part, you know?
And would you trade places with Wendy?
No.
Me either.
Not this one. Sorry. It just seems, you know, very stressful. A lot of trauma. I just don't think it'd be for me.
Lots of trauma.
Lots.
All right. Well, next week we're telling Riley all about Bad Behavior by GM Ferry, and we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
So I already know that this is a B movie spinoff.
Yeah.
But I don't even know where to start. I've read the synopsis of this book too, like what it's about, and I cannot even remember it right right now.
But it's a girl. She's got some red lips on the cover and there's a bee in front of her mouth. And I feel like she's gonna fall in love with like a little bee shapeshifter.
Oh.
And maybe she's gonna be like a florist of some type, because that's how it was in the fucking bee movie.
Good movie.
I think it's gonna be a florist and a bee type man. Okay. He's gonna have some like, wow. I hope he has a stinger. I do.
He might.
I can't wait. I love GM Fairy books too, so.
Yeah. She did get in my swamp, so we know she's good.
We stan her here.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo! Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.